Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
On behalf of our family of hosts, staff, and the millions of listeners who have tuned in since 2009, we want to wish you happy holidays and ask for your support as we launch our daily in-house news coverage. Please consider making us a part of your end-of-year giving in 2013. Your membership donation is tax-deductible and the best way to show you believe in our work and the importance of a free, food-focused media resource. Consider donating today at heritageradionetwork.org by clicking the donate button. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to Word of Mouth with Leti Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Leti Sue. And what do I do when I'm not hosting Word of Mouth? Out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear on my show, and working with my clients, which includes chefs, sommeliers, big brands, and startups. All those doing what's most delicious and innovative. Today's in-studio guest on hashtag people we like, we'll welcome Andre Mack, former somm at the French Laundry and Per Se, now winemaker, designer, coloring book creator, fellow get shit dunner. We'll talk all that and a little bit about what it's like to be the black sommelier. I asked him for permission to say that. I did. But before that, we'll head to the Green Market with one of my favorites to hear from, okay, so I'm a little bit nerdy, culinary scientist Ali Bouzari. Last week, we had our friend Maxime Bileon. I love those culinary scientists doing really exciting stuff. He works with the likes of the French Laundry, hearing about the French Laundry here again on today's show, Meadowood and the Culinary Institute of America. And he'll talk beet history, family, science, and so on. We'll zoom back to the studio to catch up with Andre Mack. Then after that, to wind it down, we'll remain here with Andre and talk about what the law of diminishing returns has to do with wine. But first, let's go to the Green Market. I'm at the Union Square Green Market with Ali Bouzari. He's a culinary scientist, does work with the likes of the Culinary Institute of America and with the French Laundry. Hey, Ali, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. It's so wonderful to get to catch you while you're in town.
Likewise, good to see you.
Where do you usually live?
I usually live in Northern California.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you're in town because?
Work and to eat more than I think is possible.
So where have you been so far?
Right when I got off the plane, I went to 11 Madison Park,
mm-hmm.
which was insane, obviously.
Day in the life of.
Yeah, it was and then yesterday, to follow that up, I went to Bettany, which was mind-blowing.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. How would you describe what you do?
I am a facilitator of knowledge, which sounds really shady, but I try to be a link between all of the wonderful knowledge that the scientific world has to offer to the culinary community,
mm-hmm.
but I try to speak in English, which is apparently the only employable skill that I have.
It's a little scary, right?
Which is great, yeah.
Thin strings.
Because all the knowledge of how food works goes back, I mean, decades and decades. But there really, before the past few years, hasn't been interest on the scientific side for people to really interface with chefs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why,
mm-hmm.
because it's so much more fun to work with chefs than scientists. But it's one of those things where people haven't really taken the initiative to try to start a dialogue with chefs. And I come from a culinary background, so speaking in terms that are relevant to chefs is something that I really, really try to make sure I pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Beets, I have some really funny food memories with beets. When I was little, my dad had a ton of brothers, so all these crazy Iranian men would be like downstairs in our kitchen, eating cans of beets, like beets straight from the can with their fingers. And my mom, who is, you know, from small town Texas, it was always wonderfully sort of tolerant of such hilariously third world activities, which I mean, it's so good.
Do Iranian men have a particular thing for beets?
Yeah, they just, there's just a healthy or unhealthy fixation on any awesome food. And whether or not canned beets is an awesome food, I don't know, but it's one of those things where they don't do anything halfway with food. So, I mean, this happened on multiple occasions, and I don't really know why. There's not really a rational explanation. But I would come downstairs, and for breakfast, it would be like Silence of the Lambs of beets, where there's just beet juice and craziness everywhere. And, yeah, so it started there. And then there's a lot of really, really cool science and history around beets. I mean, when you look at sugar beets and how, you know, it was this whole new way to get sugar to the world, and how, I mean, in a lot of ways, if we had discovered how to make sugar from sugar beets first, a lot of slavery practices around the world may not have held up for as long as they did. Because it's crazy. Sugar cane is one of those things that you have to really, really break down and process quickly, because it's so sugary and fragile that other stuff wants to beat you to it.
Mm-hmm.
Beat to it. Sorry, that's terrible. But sugar beets are something that can be stored, and so they're less labor intensive and all this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole sort of cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
But then the science of it is also pretty cool.
Cool. So
there's a lot of really cool stuff going on with beets and pigments. So one of the things that I found is really interesting for chefs, and something that we work on a lot, is color. I mean, color in food and preserving color and extracting color is something that...
It's very challenging.
And it's fundamental to making good food. You know, it's everybody, you know, when you're first starting out as a commis, you're learning about, you know, blanching your green veg properly so that you don't lose the color and all these things. So beets are cool because the pigments in beets are super, super stable, and they do some weird stuff. Like a lot of colors in foods that are bright red and sort of in the purple spectrum, they're sensitive to acid and sensitive to pH in general. So just like, did you ever have a hot tub, or did you ever work at a pool when you were younger?
Didn't work at one, but I had pools.
I only say that because all my friends were lifeguards. That was like the
all
job of choice.
All your friends were lifeguards.
For real. That was a summer job of choice in Denver, Colorado. The only reason I say that, and this may not have any relevance to you, but everybody that I was growing up with had experiences testing the pH of the pool to make sure that you weren't going to kill anybody. And what they did with that was they had the little colored pH strips that you would stick in the pool and in different parts of the water, and, you know, it would turn colors depending on what the pH of the pool was.
I remember that from science class.
Right, or science class or whatever. I mean, now you have chefs doing it to make sure that when they can stuff, they're not going to kill anybody. You know? I mean, so the same sort of phenomenon that makes those pH strips change color works with beets. I mean, it also works with things like purple cabbage and berries and the fall leaves and stuff.
So what can we do with beets?
So
at home,
there's a lot of things that you can do with beets at home. I think one of the things that people should do with beets, just to nerd out, is to take a bunch of beet juice and throw like some baking soda on it, and it'll turn purple.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where there's a shift and the chemicals and cool nerdy things happen, and that changes color.
Okay, so what's like a at home like party trick or dish that you know you would, you know,
at
not
home,
just for the hell of it, but just something that will change color
trick
and taste delicious as well?
Change color and taste delicious is hard to do with beets. The way that pigment works, it sort of sucks because it has no culinary relevance whatsoever. But purple cabbage actually does have one of those transitions that's in a useful spot.
Okay.
Chef Sanghoon Desjambes from Belgium did this dish a couple years ago at Madrid Fusion that freaked me out at how secretly nerdy it was. He had this like consomme that I'm pretty sure he'd stained with purple cabbage, and it was this beautiful dish, and the consomme was blue. And to finish the dish, he added a little bit of citrus to it, and it like, you know, before everybody's eyes, the broth turned red.
Oh, wow.
And it was super cool because he's actually, I mean, that broth was probably a little bit under seasoned, and with just a little bit of acidity, he's like finishing it perfectly.
Yep.
And it also changes color.
Wow.
So that's one of those things where, I mean,
crush on him.
Of course. I need to tread lightly because I really hate it when people do sciencey looking and sounding things for the sake of doing it rather than for any sort of impact on flavor or the benefit of the diner. Because then people, even if they do it really, really well, people will inevitably copy it, and they'll do it poorly, and then people will call them out on it, and they'll say stuff like, "Oh, all this science in the kitchen, it gets away from flavor and stuff." In the case of people who are doing a hack job, it does, and then people come yell at me, and I don't like that. But as far as a party trick, not party trick, a great thing to do with beets at home that I like to do, so this is something that, again, just comes from a bunch of Iranian men around, like, a fire with a bunch of beets and potatoes and stuff, is just throwing it in the fire and letting the outside get incredibly charred. I mean, really, really charred. You throw it in the embers and it becomes an ember.
Yep.
And then you sort of carve away all that outer layer, and then you've got this beautiful
jewel
heart in the middle of it, which is cool because, for me, like, I freaked out about that because when I was little, that was just what we had. That's what we did because
we hung out with the big boys.
Because we were hanging out with the big boys, and we were also kind of lazy and weird, and there was no other way to easily cook a beet when you're, you know, around a bonfire.
Yep.
And then, I mean, they'll do that kind of stuff. I think at Mugaritz in Spain, they do sort of a root vegetable ember. At Noma, they do that kind of stuff.
I think Matt Leiner did one at Aterra as
well. I think they do one at Aterra. I mean, it's an amazing technique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that I'm sure those guys at some point were just sitting around a bonfire and they just threw something in the fire.
And they're like, whoops, it's delicious.
Yeah, whoops, it's delicious. So it's a really, really cool, there's, I think, a cool story to doing that when you have friends over or whatever.
What does it actually do to change the taste of the beet when you sort of throw it into the fire? I mean, it's funny. It's like there's so many different, people have lots of different ways to cook beets. You wrap it in foil or not, you peel it first or not, and this and that.
Sure. A couple of things. So, when you are throwing something directly in ridiculously hot coals, side notes, caramelization is a word I'm about to, And I'm sort of sensitive about, I'm sort of sensitive about this word because people misuse it all the time. They'll say, you know, this caramelized steak or caramelized onions would, actually that's different kind of reaction that's making. Okay, sorry, that's incredibly nerdy. But
wait, that's a different kind of reaction.
It's a different kind of reaction. It's Maillard reaction.
With steak with
the crust of nice bread, with coffee, with steak, all those things are Maillard browning.
Okay.
It's similar stuff, but there's proteins involved.
Okay.
So
great.
You get different flavors out of it. It plays by different rules, et cetera, et cetera.
Got it.
With beets thrown into a fire, I'm willing to wager that you get some pretty good caramelization because it does require ridiculously high temperatures, like caramel making temperatures,
yep.
Right?
Oh, okay. Instead of like beet burning temperatures, it's sugar versus protein.
Yeah.
Caramelization is different. Is that what you mean?
Caramelization is different. It plays by different rules. It gets a lot of the same sort of stuff going, but it's slightly different. Anyway, throw a beet into a fire, you're going to get some crazy amounts of caramelization. Most of that is actually probably going to get scraped off when you get rid of the layer of ash that your food has now become.
Mm-hmm.
But the aromas generated there are going to permeate it.
It's like smoking meat.
It's like smoking meat, but it's smoking beet, and that it rhymes and it's good.
Yay!
So you're going to get a lot of that kind of stuff going on. Really, really, really nice heat transfer. Different things happen in your food depending on how that heat is delivered to your food. And so, a lot of it is going to be on that surface layer, but then that stuff will permeate and you get really, really cool effects. And then there's the X factors of being outside and probably shivering and having a bonfire and pulling this thing out and, you know, the expectation of that.
So I'm learning so much about Iranian men. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
Have a good rest of your time in New York.
I'm gonna.
Yeah. Hey, 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 welcome back to the studio. I'm your host, Leyte Sue, and you're listening to Word of Mouth on heritageradionetwork.org. Before we get to welcome our in-studio guest, wanted to shout out some social media infos. Hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW, @heritage_radio, @LeyteSue, @AndreMack, AndreMack, and @MutinNoirWines, MOUTONNOIRWINES. Check it out. I did a little social media audit of 100, and he's actually doing not too shabby. So now for people we like. Andre!
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
You look like a real cool kid. You've like got the hipster the hipster shirt, and you look very much at home here at Roberta's.
I feel very comfortable here at Roberta's.
Do you come here a lot?
No, this is probably maybe my fourth or fifth time.
So cool.
Not as much as I'd like to.
Thank you for making the trek. It was a pretty drab. I would be sad if I didn't get to look forward to talking to you this morning.
No, it was great. I had a late night, so I'm slightly hungover, but that's the, you know.
As did I yesterday morning. we hung out for a moment, and then I came here to the studios to do a holiday riot, XXXXXmas, with Mike and Judy. They have a show on Sundays, but this was a special edition, and then Mike forced us to stay and have dinner when I really didn't need to eat or drink, so...
Another feeling, 'tis the season, right?
Yes, yes. Well, we're lucky to be us, as we'll talk about. So you have a new project, a coloring book.
Yes, it's called Small Time Cooks. It's a culinary coloring book / activity book. It's going to release late January, early February.
For adults?
For adults. It's for the kids and all of us, right?
So I
some really
love
cool,
that.
Fun, interesting stuff. And we're just putting the finishing touches on it. It's really cool. It's a really great project I've been working on, and you know, we're donating 30% of the proceeds to Charlie Trotter's foundation. So
I like how you just thought, hey, I want to do a coloring book, and then instead of saying I'm trying to, everyone goes, I try to write a book, I'm trying. There's no word, the word trying does not belong in our lives.
No, I think especially it's easy to do when you're really passionate about it, and I don't know, I just, I've always kind of been that way. It's just, you know, it hasn't been that thing of like, oh, I'm going to try to do this, I'm going to try to do that. My mom always used to say, you know, don't tell me about it, show me. You know, so I've kind of taken that whole attitude towards life.
So Wiley Dufresne might be in it. He's going to be in it.
All the top chefs are. I'd like for them to be in it. So right now we're just getting all the permissions from the chefs.
So you're going to draw them?
Yeah.
Because you draw?
Yeah, there's a... I can't draw, so that's why I'm a graphic artist, right? So, but yeah, there are illustrations in the book. There's, you know, a mushroom word find. There's a sous vide problem-solving activity, dot-to-dot, and traditional kind of coloring pages. So
much fun. And I didn't know that Wiley's dad, Dewey, is his manager.
Yeah, well, I mean, he says that, I'm sure. And all our parents are our managers in some way. Yeah, he's Dewey's a really great guy, so I'm looking forward to seeing him soon.
Well, we like his sense of humor, at least.
No, totally, we sure do.
So what was this I remember a story you tell me that he likes to yank your chain.
Yeah, he's a jokester. He's a really good guy. Anybody that knows him, he's really great. And so he's always been a really fun character. And when I first moved to New York, I moved to New York in 2004 to mm-hmm. Work at Per Se, and not really knowing anybody here, he was one of the handful of people that kind of made me feel at home. He always made a lot of jokes, you know. I came to New York, and you know, the name of my company, so I make wine in Oregon. The name mm-hmm. of my company is called Mouton Noir, mm-hmm. So translation to black sheep. So, you know, I'm the guy who has a French name, Andre, but doesn't speak French. I'm a guy that, you know, I have a name of my company's French, but I don't I make French wine. We make Pinot Noir from Oregon. And then Black Sheep was a name that I had gotten from, you know, from fellow sommeliers here in New York. Mouton, you know, just there. It's obviously, you see me, there's not a lot of people that look like me, that do what I do. I always found that as an advantage in some ways, right? You know, at least people didn't forget you. So it was always interesting. So I had a lot of different experiences like that.
But when you're on the floor as the head sommelier Per Se, you know, it resulted in some fascinating
experiences. I think it caught people off guard. You know, for me, I really felt like I didn't...
So you'd come up to the table and then...
Yeah, I would come up to the table, the server would come by and say, hey, you know, I would, table, three wants to see the sommelier. So I'd go over to the table and I'd say, hey, hi, how you guys doing? You know, it's like, you guys want to talk about wine, that kind of thing. And they said, yeah, we're waiting for the sommelier to come over. And so that was always, I didn't know what that was attributed to for a while, you know what I mean? But it was funny. It was like, I'm sure they just didn't expect me, of all people, to be the person to talk about wine with them. So I've always had a good experience and a good relationship with it, and it always kind of worked to my advantage. Oh, wow, we just hopped right into race, right? We just hopped right into that. It was a different experience. I think it was eye-opening for some people. You know, I'd go to the table and they'd say, oh, yeah, I'm looking for the sommelier, and I'd pause for a minute. There'd be this kind of dead silence, and then, some days I would spin around and be like, ta-da! It was always interesting, an interesting interaction. I was always surprised by when I caught people off guard.
Yeah, I think that's just really rad. I mean, the world of wine is so ripe for everybody's preconceptions about wine and the people around wine and the culture of wine to just be turned on its head. So I dig it.
Totally.
So you had a really funny story about, Dewey did something really hilarious that I, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, no, we can. I mean, Dewey was always great and always made me feel comfortable. Yeah, he would, I would walk into a tasting one day and he said, he'd look up and he'd see me and he'd smile and then he would just start screaming. He goes, oh my God, they serve black people in here. So he's always funny, and we always had a good time joking about my presence in the wine world and how fun it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, Andre started out, like many of us, working at a bank, because banks tend to, financial services institutions tend to employ a lot of people, and we thank them for that. But you used to do that job that is so unusual sounding to me, doesn't exist anymore, which is that I learned yesterday that you could walk up to an ATM and then if you check out your balance and then if you wanted to invest in something, you could pick up a phone hanging on the side
totally.
Of the ATM and call someone like an Andre, and Andre would quote a price to you.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. So when I worked for Citicorp Investment Services in San Antonio, Texas after college. And before you became so I was going to go on to work for Citicorp Investment Service, you had to train and answer the phones for the ATM. And at the Citibank had this really great idea that next to every ATM machine, they would actually put a phone. And so you could pick up this phone if you had any questions, and the phone would ring in San Antonio, Texas. And so it was always interesting, the conversations that we got and that we got to talk to and listen to. And it was an interesting job. I gained 40 pounds and decided that I would go back to restaurants. And that's kind of where my love affair started with wine.
Mm-hmm. And then you went and worked for the French Laundry.
Yeah, I started to learn about wine. I got my first sommelier job at a steakhouse in Texas.
Okay.
And that was kind of the first thing. And then I started to venture out a little bit more, just trying to figure out, the wine scene in Texas was very different and, circa 2000, 2001.
It still is very, very different, actually.
But, there just wasn't as many wine professionals, and it just didn't have the presence. And I ended up spending some time at Charlie Trotter staging with the wine team there.
Cool.
And that really kind of gave me the confidence to feel like my wine program, I was doing the right things and doing the things that I wanted to do.
What was the big break? These are all such huge names. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just being prepared and being at the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
I started to study about wine. And my whole thing was, you're constantly studying on your own. And the only way to kind of test your knowledge is a test or / a competition. And so came across this thing, and I was like, hey, it's a young sommelier contest in America. And I was like, okay, cool. I want to see where I stack up on my own. And so I kind of went through that process and, kind of saw it to the end and ended up winning the competition. And along the way, I met these really great people. So I met a whole bunch of people from Trotters. I met Paul Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
who had just became the wine director for all of Thomas Keller's restaurants. I met him in Houston, and so we kind of forged a relationship there, and then that was it. He offered me a job, and I said yes, of course, and and the rest, I guess, is kind of history. I moved to California and worked, and then they were opening New York, and I decided that that's the place I wanted to be.
How many years in total were you with the Keller Group?
About 4 years.
Got it. And when you left, you tell this great story about, you know, everyone asks you, why did you leave this, like, big deal, cushy job as, you know, the head sommelier of a, you know, many-starred restaurant, and what do you, I guess, what do you answer? You know, you tell a story about how that one gal was, or guy was, like, smoking around the corner.
Yeah, you know, I left that job. I wanted, you know, I was a waiter who fell in love with wine.
Yeah.
And I wanted to learn more about wine, and what better way to kind of learn about wine through the lens of a sommelier that was already in the restaurant. And so for me, it was something easy and I could grasp. And then, you know, you fast forward, you know, years down the road, and I, you know, you're at one of the really great restaurants
in the world.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, there's a lot of things that happen as you start to run a program, you find yourself less and less actually doing the thing that you love, which was actually, you know, touching the wine, serving the wine, mm-hmm. all these other things, and you were stuck in manager meetings, all these different kind of things, and I really wanted to kind of refocus and kind of fall back in love with wine, and I thought the best way for me to do that was to hop on the production side.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, you know, it's like I had like this yearning to like to do other stuff, like, you know, to be more creative. I feel as a sommelier that there are parts of the job that are creative, but a lot of times you're just a curator. You're mm-hmm. collecting things, people's stories and wines, and curating a list, and it was great, and there's nothing wrong with that. I just wanted to be a little bit more creative and had an entrepreneurial spirit. So by hopping on the production side, it really gave me a chance to kind of to do all those three things, and you know, and it's always different. You know, I had started to sell wine in New York, and I was remember I was on a particular work with, and
you were selling wine with which company?
They were selling my wine, it was one of my distributors. So I was on a work with, so I was with a sales rep.
You're selling your own wine.
We'd go, yeah. And so we were going to this wine shop, and as we approached the wine shop, the sales rep recognized the buyer who was around the corner kind of smoking a cigarette, and he was kind of fidgety, and he kept looking around. He seemed very nervous, and he said he would meet us inside, and so we go inside. And
like, what are you doing, drugs?
Yeah, it was really funny. And we come inside, and we start to talk, and he says, so they introduce me, and he's like, yeah, he goes, oh, you worked at Per Se. He goes, why would you ever quit a job like that? He goes, now you just went from telling everybody what you thought about their wine to now I get to tell you about your wine. And I said, well, you know, the difference is that I'm not hiding around the corner smoking a cigarette from the owner. Like, this is my thing.
Yep.
It's something that I love. And, whenever you put yourself out there, you're always subject to people's critiques. But I think you have to embrace that, you know, that uncomfortable part of that, right? I think most people don't want to hear what other people have to say, so they just don't go for it. And I think that the biggest thing is that... When you put yourself out there, just know that you do that, but that's the only way that you can succeed, I feel.
Oh, and yes, it takes a huge amount of bravery to do that, but then that then leads to the many, many dream jobs.
No, totally, you're totally right. And I feel like even like, you know, a job like Per Se, you know, that wasn't for me to hold on for as long as I could. I felt like it had ran its course. It was a really great experience, and I was ready to move on to something else. And I felt like there's many other people that should have that job, that should have that experience of working there. It taught me a lot, and it was a really fun place to work.
Awesome. We're going to take a very quick commercial break. After that, did you know that Andre's wife actually wrote a book? And we're going to delve into wife talk.
You are listening to Tom Cruise on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Stay tuned for more from Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue.
Awesome. I didn't mean to talk about it.
The following is an actor reading an actual customer email from Heritage Foods USA.
My family and I enjoyed the Heritage turkey. It was far superior to the regular mass-produced turkeys in terms of flavor and texture. Absolutely delicious and worth the difference in price. We will never go back to the regular turkeys. It made our holidays more enjoyable. Thank you, Heritage Foods USA.
Heritage Foods USA hopes you had a great holiday season. For more specials on pork, beef, and other meats, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, welcome back to the studio. I'm Leyte Sue. You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. And in the studio live right now, we have Andre Mack, former Persée and the French Laundry sommelier, now winemaker and coloring book creator. And a ball of awesomeness. Thanks for being here. We were about to start talking about your wife's book, Super Rad. You know, I actually looked at the cover, and I remember that a couple years ago I saw the book and was really intrigued because it's like kind of the secrets of working at Persée, right? And that was before I got into food.
Yeah, no, it was great. She wrote a book called Service Included, and I met my wife at the restaurant, and we kind of had this this secret relationship, and she decided that she
would... That must have been hot.
Yeah, it was pretty hot. It was hot. It was cool. It was cool. You know, and it's an interesting... We all... For all those who've worked in restaurants, you spend a lot of time. You know, you spend about 80 hours a week in a restaurant with all these other people, and you actually see them a lot more than you see your friends or your family. And so it's just kind of natural that... you would be attracted to someone there. But anyways, we had this kind of secret relationship, and she worked there for 18 months and then decided that she was going to go write her book. And it was great. It's been great. It's, you know.
You had the rights to of first edit.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. Yeah, it was great. No, yeah. You know, my big thing was like, you know, write the book that you want to write and, you know, and then let me see it. Right, so it's like, and at the time, as it was, you know, I had left Persée before the book had even come out, so it was interesting. It was definitely made some interesting things at work. You know, to be in a manager's meeting and you'd look through the agenda and you see, you know, your girlfriend's name, my wife now, on the agenda, and you're like, oh shit, and then I'm like, oh my god, you know, I try to get up to go to the bathroom, like, you know, the topic before, they're like, no, sit down, you know. So it made it interesting, and it was, you know, it's been a great ride. It's been a really great adventure.
How did you she was back of house or front of house?
She was started off as a food runner, and then kind of worked her way up and became a captain there.
Got
and
it.
So you know, it made it, you know, it made it easy to see each other. We know how work relationships are, so.
Well, it sounds like you learned a lot about relationships.
I did, you know. It was very, I think that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, may I venture that, you know, sometimes it's so cool. Like, sometimes we meet the people that you and your wife ended up together, and sometimes we meet people we don't end up together with, because all relationships end in death or a breakup, which yesterday this came up during dinner, and that was like a little bit depressing.
Yeah.
But what's really, what I think is really rad is that the gal that you dated before your wife, she ended up going into, you guys went into food almost like together, you know, you developed together something that even if the relationship didn't work out, that you know, you would have a synergy there.
Correct. No, and I think things happen for a reason. And with, you know, with the ex-girlfriend, that was really great. We were in this really great time in our lives, being exploratory and really gung-ho about what we wanted out of life. And that was great. And that those adventures led us to California and then subsequently to New York. And then, you know, nothing lasts forever. And, you know, we kind of went our separate ways and but very grateful of that whole experience. I mean, right? You know, it's better to love, than to not love at all. Right? Well, it's kind of corny, right?
Cool that she ended up going into, like, she ended up becoming a pastry chef.
Yeah, no, totally. No, she, you know, she. I think a lot of life's decision is just being prepared for them. It's, you know, sometimes it's about being at the right place at the right time, but being prepared for those situations. And mm-hmm. I think she was prepared, and she took the ball and ran with it. So it was good for her.
So let's talk about your personal brand, Andre.
My personal brand.
Yeah. I think it's really great that you see the big picture, and you're sort of, you're embracing media and you know, wine for the world rather than just, you know, wine and food media. You know, you think about it really interestingly.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, why not swim in the big pond? Right? I don't know. I never really looked at it as a personal brand. It's that word has been kind of tossed around, and I don't know how I actually feel about it. I just try to be me. You know what I mean? And you know, I think it, you know, I just try to be me, and I always think like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this happened? Wouldn't this be cool if that happened? And I think that's kind of mm-hmm. led me to different places. So, you know, it's like at some point you say, hey, wouldn't that be cool if this existed? And then you go and type it into the Google machine, and Google tells you that it does exist.
A coloring book for adults all about chefs. It's like,
and then you're like, oh, man. And then I think at some point you keep asking yourself those questions, and then you get ahead of the curve. And then there's like this kind of silence. Like you type it into Google, and it doesn't exist. And then there's a silence that comes over, and you kind of look around, and you're like, are you serious? And then at that point, you have to figure out whether you're going to react and go for it. And so I just kind of live by those kind of laws. It's like, you know, just like I always ask myself, wouldn't this be cool if this would exist? And I feel like we all do that. You know what I mean? Because, you know.
Yeah, we all do that. The ideas are a dime a dozen.
Correct.
It's about actually following through on it.
Correct. Executing. That is very true.
By the way, one total like aside, would you agree that something that doesn't exist that would be, is very necessary right now is a romantic comedy about online dating, but not like the last, not like You've Got Mail, but just there is no mass online romantic comedy about online dating.
Yeah. No, there's not.
Isn't that amazing?
That
Hollywood
is, amazing.
Is like way behind the times.
I'm thinking about that. No, you're totally right.
Right? So it's not something that I would necessarily work on, but I just wanted to put that out there in the world. And then you can, in teeny tiny letters, credit Lady Sue, Andre Mack, Wham Show.
Put it out there. You have to put it out there.
You also do some wine label design. You design your own labels.
Yeah, I do.
And for others as well.
Yeah, it all started out of necessity. Like, I just didn't have any money to do anything. I always thought like, wow, like, so I'd get the software and I kind of learn how to do it and get close to it. And then I could pass it off to a designer and it wouldn't cost as much. Mm-hmm. And that never happened. Right. So I just submitted the labels and started to do my own work. And, you know, and that's always been really interesting to me. I was always kind of I always kind of tinkered around with it. Mm-hmm. I can remember a friend of mine, he was like so excited. He was like, Corel Draw number 3 or something came out, and he was so excited. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And so, he talked me through it, and that's kind of where it all started. You know, and I was that guy, you know. I worked at Red Lobster, you know what I mean? I was just, going through college, and, you know, and I was the guy that, you know, took the logo and, you know, put crosses in the eyes and, you know, and change the, you know, to say, you know, Red Lobster Dead Lobster. And we all wore these t-shirts because we're all disgruntled employees during a manager meeting. So I was always kind of like,
At Red Lobster?
Yeah, no, totally. So I kind of had that, always did that kind of fun stuff with design. And then when it came time to
that's
create,
where you got your serving chops from. That's like high volume.
Yeah, there he is right there.
No, yeah.
And so I was like, so the design aspect was just only out of necessity that I didn't have the funds to actually hire someone. So I just started to do my own stuff. And from that, you know, other people started to see, and, you know, people started to ask, hey, you know, can you do some of this stuff for us? And can you do some of that stuff for me? So in 2011, I started a company called Get Fresh Crew, which is basically my design firm.
You're a great namer, by the way. I like all of your names. So, I don't know, top 5 tips for wine labels that work? I mean, not to get all...
Yeah, you know what? It's so funny. It's like, I think, you know, it should be legible. I mean, my whole thing is you try to get people to pick it up. right? You know,
so
somewhere.
How,
sometimes I read
that's so
somewhere.
Elusive.
Yeah, well, I read somewhere that you know that people are you know 23% more likely to buy it if they actually pick it up or actually touch it, something like that. I don't know. I read that somewhere and I thought that was
so
interesting.
So put some velvet on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think for me, I thought you know the labels that I design are are black and white. They're slightly edgy. They're stark in that way, so they're very different than everything else on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually kind of bounce
eye.
Off. They're very primitive looking, you know, kind of block lettering, but all fun, I think.
Because you can't draw, I get it.
Yeah, that's right. I can't draw, right?
Everything comes out of that.
That's right. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I think it just should be authentic to who you are and what you're about, and that's it.
So when you're designing for your clients, then you're putting on, you know, putting yourself in their shoes, and you're like, I am this other wine brand.
Well, some of that, you know, that was very hard for me when I started to take on clients because I only really knew how to design for myself, and so when I designed for myself, it never went through, you know, the ranks of different people to say, well, yay or nay, or change this or change that. I was the only person that did that. So I knew when I was done working on it. When you have other clients, you know, they pass it around and everybody wants to change things. And that was a little difficult for me. But then also part of someone hiring you to design is design something for them is that they like your work and some of your creative voice that comes through. So for me, I had to learn, you know, that's what you're paying for is the stuff that I do. If that's not what you want, then you should probably hire an in-house design person.
Cool. So before we wind it down with Andre here in the studio, I want to do two truths and a lie about Andre. So first, he likes to make his own tortillas.
Yes.
Like, he's really passionate about that. So what kind? Corn or flour?
We use flour.
Okay, cool. And then number two is that everything he eats at home, he eats with only chopsticks.
That is correct.
Okay, and then number three is that he went to college at where again?
Oklahoma City,
which is the school known to have the most Miss Americas, like, ever. So those are actually... Ta-da, all real facts about Andre. There are no lies.
Oh,
dun, dun, dun. So we're going to wind it down now.
All right. Wind down.
In the last 2 minutes of the show, Andre, I want to know what the law of diminishing returns has to do with wine.
Well, I mean, I always like to bring it back to food and wine pairing. I think... it was always this kind of thing of how do you explain this in layman's terms to people, exactly what that means. Like, you know,
people get all freaked out about food and wine.
Well, yeah, I think there's this mythical thing that everybody thinks that this magical thing is supposed to happen in your mouth, but no one can explain to you exactly what happens. And they talk about it being harmonious and this and that, and that's all. And granted, it's all left up to interpretation. But, you know, for me, it's always been, when we talk about the law of diminishing returns, it's always been wine plays the secondary role when we're talking about food and wine pairing. You know, wine exists there to cleanse your palate between each bite, so the first bite tastes as good as the last bite. You know, I always try to explain it, you know, if you're chewing a piece of gum, this is kind of crude. If you're chewing a piece of gum and you start to chew it, you've been chewing it for about an hour and it kind of loses all its flavor. And if you actually take it out of your mouth and come back to it 20 minutes, don't put it underneath the table. But if you take it out and put it back in your mouth, it's like magic. It's like, wow, it has flavor. And so I think a lot of times what happens is that we're programmed, you know, you sit down and you have this great piece of meat and you take your first bite and you're like, oh my God, this tastes so good.
I especially like the tip of the pizza, like the first bite of the pizza. Like, that is the best.
Yeah, no, it's so good.
First bite, the juicy bits.
And what happens is that, you know, you experience, you know, palate fatigue, you know, kind of towards the end of the steak, the steak doesn't taste as good. And so what we've always talked about, the basics and the premise for food and wine pairing is so the first bite tastes as good as the last bite.
And by the way, that's exactly why Asian people have got it down. We like to share and order a lot of different dishes on the Lazy Susan because we very much are econ nerds and we understand the law of diminishing returns when it comes to the first and last bite of food.
Correct.
Boom.
Correct.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thanks so much, everybody. This is Word of Mouth with Leyte Su on heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks again for listening, and until next time. eat well, be swell.
Tick, 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 tick.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.